Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Thursday morning, December 17th, 2009. It's now about 6:31 a.m. Central Standard Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good morning, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Send us your emails at any time to comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, sutton-associates.net. In his bi-weekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on contraryinvestorscafe.com. And folks, he is the best. He's an economist. He's a friend of mine. And he does an excellent job of explaining where we are and where we're probably going because of where we are. And, you know, it's confusing out there. Especially, it's almost impossible today to avoid television. You know, I don't watch TV, but I turn it on once in a while to see what's going on and stuff like that. And it just seems that they spew so much garbage, you don't know what's right and wrong. I mean, it sounds good, but it doesn't seem to fit well. It doesn't seem to be right. Nothing seems to be right. And that's because it's not right, folks. If it doesn't seem right, it ain't right. And that's why it's important. And I really encourage you to go and visit Andy Sutton's website. I think it'll help you tremendously, especially to protect your assets. He won't be selling you anything. Lastly, I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Folks, my voice is a little shot today, so I'm going to see if I can take it a little easy. next Thursday is the 24th. That's Christmas Eve, obviously, and I think I'll be broadcasting anyway. It'll be in the morning, you know, early in the morning, so I'll do that, and we'll just take it from there. I don't know what the subject will be. I don't want to touch on this Tiger Woods thing because it's been hacked over in ignosium, but I had a thought the other day, and I didn't know whether or not this was a valid thought or what. One of my friends said no, it did not, and so he's probably correct. But you know, we have an African American president whose numbers are going down substantially. I think he's in the mid-40s now as far as approval rating is concerned, and it's not going to get any better, I don't think. And then we have Tiger Woods, who's an African-American superstar, and both of them seem to be, and he's obviously faltering like crazy. And I wonder if the African-American community is starting to feel a pinch from this. I mean, not that it makes any difference, but, you know, I just philosophize about this stuff sometimes, which is mostly meaningless stuff. I don't mean any disrespect whatsoever, please. I think what that tells us is that no matter what the color of your skin, your religious affiliation, it makes no difference. It makes no difference who you are. There are very, very few people who, when in power, maintain a sense of self, a sense of a true obligation, and stick to the foundation, you know, the principles by which they should be withholding, and they got elected. This, it really, truly, truly bothers me. Here we have an omniscient president, and what he's doing, in my opinion, and I could be wrong, but I don't think I am, in that he is aligning himself, or he's portraying himself as being the world problem solver, or the problem solver for the United States. And that, thank heavens, that we have him to go around and speak to the auto industry, to speak to small businesses, to large businesses, to speak to the financial community. Because, you know, without his guidance, without his words of wisdom, none of these companies or industries would really know what to do. It's like riding a boat rudderless, and they're just floating around not knowing what to do. And I just find that so appalling, that, you know, I would no more go to, you know, the CEO of General Motors and tell him how to operate his business. Now, I have some suggestions from my perspective, but I don't know enough about the auto industry as to know why they made the decisions they did. You know, for example, they dropped the Pontiac line, and I always thought that was a neat car. And I thought it had an ingrained, it sort of separated itself from some of the other cars that GM made. And I was really surprised that they dropped it. Now, they kept Buick. And to me, Buick had lost all of its identity, especially to the foreign markets. And also lost its identity to Cadillac, because Cadillac seemed to have brought itself down a little bit, if you will. And back in the 50s, there was a very stark delineation between each one of those lines, the Chevy, the Pontiac, the Oldsmobile, the Buick, and the Cadillac. And then it was sort of in that line as far as quality was concerned, if you will, whatever that's supposed to mean. And, you know, I was surprised that they knocked the Pontiac out and kept the Buick. Well, I don't know why they did that, but it just didn't make sense to me. But it could be because maybe many of the Buicks that are sold out of Cadillac dealerships, and that they didn't have to close as many dealerships, although Pontiac may have been more of a favorite brand. But it was much more expensive because Pontiac dealerships typically sat on were standalone dealerships. I mean, things like that. You know, I can go on in ignosium, and I don't want to bother you with that because that's not the intent of this program. But you know, the audacity, you know, the gumption of a president to go to speak to these people, and the car industry and say, you guys have to sell cars. Now, I want to put you in a room, you know, with these executives. I mean, now, we may not agree with them, you know, but they know the car industry, and they know in and out. We think we know more than they do. We really don't, you know, let's be honest with them. And now, they may not be very good and all this other stuff, and they make mistakes, but you can't get all the CEOs and say, all right, they're all bad, and now the president's going to come in and square away the auto industry. But that's exactly the image that he is trying to portray, is that without me going out there and taking this proactive approach, you know, the auto industry in the United States would collapse. And nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, he's going to destroy the auto industry. Now, I want to give you a scenario. Obama gets there and says, CEOs, I have you gathered here together because I want to encourage you to make cars that people want. Now, just think of that. You're a CEO, and you're sitting there, and you're going, wow, man, that's mind-blowing, man. Hey, Willie, you know, how about that? You think we can make a car that people actually want to buy? Jeez, am I glad. Wow, I'm so happy that the president made that. You know, now we can go back and start making some money. You know, it's just so stupid and ridiculous. Now, you know what actually happens behind closed doors is not what we hear on TV, and that's what bothers me. it's more like, well, you know, if you want the government subsidies, ba-da-bing, ba-da-bang, ba-da-boom, you know, deals here, deals there, you know, and my next election, ba-da-bing, ba-da-bang, ba-da-bing, you know, whatever the case, they're all deal makers, you know. And then the president comes out and he says, look, I got to say this, this, and that. This is what I do. I'm going to call you the bad guys, this and that, you know, ba-da-bing, ba-da-bang. And they're all in agreement with that. I mean, nothing is a surprise. Everything is orchestrated. And then we come out thinking, well, geez, oh, boy, that president is certainly brave to go in there and tell those auto executives what to do. You know, it doesn't even pass the laugh test. You know, they say that the auto industry did not make cars that people wanted. That's why they lost money. Now, that was garbage. The thing is, people wanted, during the first decade of this century, they wanted SUVs. The last decade of the 20th century, they wanted SUVs. And we built SUVs, and they made lots of money. Things changed very quickly on them, and they couldn't retool fast enough. It's not that they weren't making cars that people wanted. They made cars that people wanted, but that the government didn't particularly care for. And, you know, you just can't go there. Now, you can imagine. Then he goes from there. He says, well, from speaking to the CEOs of the auto industry, he's going to go and have a meeting with the businesses in America, you know, to create jobs. Now, what the hell does this guy know about creating jobs? You know, I mean, he knows nothing. He's never created a job in his life. I know more than he does. I can tell you that because I've created jobs. I know what it takes. And it's not government intervention. It's not government assistance. In fact, that destroys it. You create jobs through innovation and initiative and productivity. And that's a lot of hard work, 24 hours a day. And it's a slow, grinding process. And it's not a government program. It's not something that you get because you got a particular subsidy to encourage you to do something. It has nothing to do with it whatsoever. And then after that, he gets the financial people together to tell them how the cow eats the cabbage in that thing, in that field. Now, come on, folks. I mean, anybody who even, I mean, gives any respect to that, you know, has really, really, really got their minds in the wrong place. I really don't know what we are going to do in the future because we can't seem to do what we want to do or we have to do or needs to be done. The only thing we'll wind up doing is we'll be doing what the government will allow us to do, give us incentives to do, and our economy will be destroyed. It's a shame. We do not have the America that we once had. And people don't even know how to think anymore about America. Because people watch television. They watch too much television, and they repeat what they hear on TV. I gave blood yesterday at the Red Cross. And I was sitting there having my juice and water and crackers afterwards. And this woman, you know, who was very nice, and she was helping out. The TV was on, and they were blabbing about the financial things. And she says, oh, she says, isn't it terrible, that greed? I said, let me ask you a question. When you say greed, what do you mean? She said, oh, all those people doing all those illegal things. I said, well, what does that have to do with greed? She says, well, that's... And she stopped. She says, well, it's sort of greedy, I guess. I said, well, let me ask you a question. What if you worked very, very hard and you were very good to people? I mean, you never cheated anyone. You were fair. You paid your taxes. You were good to your employees. You worked day and night. And you amassed a large amount of money, whatever that is to you, a large amount of money. And you decided that you wanted to keep all that money. You didn't want to spend any of it. You're going to spend very, very little of it. You just wanted to have all the money, and you wanted to keep it. In fact, when you die, you put in your will that you want to be buried with your money. Is that greed? She said, no. I said, so I don't understand what you're talking about. She said, that's a good point. I said, what you are talking about is illegal activity. But the television uses the word greed sort of to cover everything up. So when someone does things that are illegal. We say that they're greedy. And that if someone is greedy, if we look, perceive someone to be greedy, we assume that they're doing something illegal. I said, they're twisting your mind. I said, we're all greedy. I mean, we all do things selfishly for ourselves and our family. We can say that's greed, if you will. The term greed can't even be defined. Remember that movie with, what's his name? I can't remember his name. You know, greed is good type thing, you know. And he says, greed is good. And in a sense, he's right. Greed is good because greed promotes initiative and innovation and productivity. It really does. Because greed not necessarily be a negative term. It could be a very positive thing. Greed means that you want to do well for yourself. Can you imagine if everyone did really well for themselves? Society would be a lot better off. Now again, what I'm taking out of the equation, you know, is illegal and immoral activities. But see, we've got how to think. We don't know how to think anymore. And then she says, well, you know, we're losing our capitalism and this and that, and the government's getting involved. I said, well, you know, that's another problem we have. Every time she said something, I was redefining her words. I said, capitalism has nothing to do with the free market because capitalism is highly prized and needed in a communist form of government, communistic form of government. I said, it's needed in a socialistic form of government. Capitalism is just the use, putting capital to work productively to produce something and hopefully to make a profit. But the government could do that. It doesn't say it's got to be an individual or a person who has freedom to do that. It's just, well, I never thought of that either. I said, that's the problem with television. You should throw it away. I said, we're just parroting what we hear on TV, and then we vote accordingly, and we get exactly what we voted for. Boy, she really stopped. She said, wow, I never thought of it that way. I said, we have to start thinking as a nation. And folks, that's the problem. We have an omniscient president, or who thinks he's omniscient, all-knowing, all-understanding, almost an aura about him that he knows everything. He doesn't know crap. Because all the president is supposed to be doing is to ensure that nothing gets in the way of people to be free. Period. Nothing gets in the way of people's freedom. That's all he's got to do. And what this president does is exactly the opposite. And just like every other president, I excuse none of them. They've all impeded our freedom. So none of them have done their job. And how do you like this man of the year, Ben Bernanke? In third place was Nancy Pelosi. I'm sorry, every time she speaks, I'm embarrassed. I mean, she doesn't know. I mean, she is really empty-headed. When she speaks, I mean, she just seems like the most, the dumbest person I've ever met in my life. And here she is getting the third place of Time. Well, I have no respect for Time magazine. I subscribed once, and I thought it was the trashiest thing. I mean, it's just a socialistic paper. It's horrible. Very prejudicial. Anyway, so there we are with that. I'd like to take a few minutes, and I'd like to read a few emails. I'm sorry for the... I'm a little down today. I had a couple of friends, but people I know die this week, and the one's very sick, and he may not make it, and have a good friend of mine, and he's not doing well, and it's been a real tough week for me. Yeah, this one is from, Z. He said, hi, Joe. Lately, a number of pro-liberty podcasts have been doing shows on intellectual property. Unfortunately, most of them tend to follow the same pattern toward socialism. It boggles my mind when a pro-liberty, small or no government people suddenly do a 180 when it comes to this topic. All of a sudden, it isn't about property rights and just moral claims of ownership, but rather, I want it, so I will take it, and if you try to get restitution or punishment, you are the bad guy. Often I think this is due to the host not understanding the difference between ideas and works of art. On one cast, I heard a guest co-host say, protecting ideas is absurd. Of course it's absurd. Ideas are elemental. We share them with each other, whether we want to or not. It's part of human communication. But ideas are not works of art. You can't own an idea, but you can own a work of art. What's the difference? A work of art requires not just freely distributed ideas, but also skill, mental labor, time, personality, and other elements. If I sell you an empty book, it's only worth whatever the going rate is for the paper it's made of and the ability for you to add your own content. If I try to sell you a book with a bunch of random words printed all over it, does that have more value or less? In most cases, less. It's just a bunch of useless gobbledygook. But I sell you a book with an engaging story that entertains you, you're more likely to pay more for it because it has value. And yet, many of these so-called pro-liberty advocates do shows essentially advocating socialism, that we have no right as the authors of a work to protect our content. They argue that once we sell them the book, they can make as many copies of it as they want and either give it away or resell it. What gives them that right? They don't contribute any of the labor it took to make that content. There's no agreement between them and the author saying, yeah, sure, go ahead and make all the copies you want. How is that different from stealing? When they bought the book, they bought the physical content, the paper, and the ability to experience the content whenever they want. If they give the book to someone else, no harm, no foul. No one gets a free lunch with borrowing. But copying, a completely different story. Long before the digital age, there was a lawyer turned philosopher who was far ahead of his time. The man named Lysander Spooner, who lived in the late 1800s. Many advocates of the philosophy of liberty mention him, but they all seem to ignore that he was a pro-intellectual property. Not necessarily state-run, mind you, but that a man's mental labor was valuable and should be protected. Always they ignore this, and it drives me batty. I have included a link below to his article on the subject for your reference. Keep it in mind, and that even Spooner blurred the distinction between ideas and works of art. What are your thoughts on this matter? Maybe we can do a show on this. Absolutely, I don't know. I wrote you back, and I said, I don't know. That's a subject that I never touched on. It makes a good point. I'm you know, very, very, very rarely do I say, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where to go. I mean, I can see the points on both sides, and I never say that. I never say I see it both sides. It's usually, boom, one side or the other, and I'm firm in my conviction, and I can give you 25 reasons why. On this one, I've never given this much thought. I would love to do a show on this, Z. Why don't you send me an email, and we'll set up a show. I'd love to hear more of it, okay? It's something that I'm not very prepared to talk about. I don't know much about that. I know there's been controversy regarding that, and I just don't know. I just honestly don't know. But thank you very much for writing, and the T-shirt's in the mail to you. Let's see. Here, on War and Nature, this is from Dynamaster. And he says, our nature is self-preservation, and as such to secure our needs. As individuals, it is easy for us to identify or define our needs, food, shelter, clothing, and such. For the mature individual, it is also easy for us to distinguish between these needs and other wants. By our nature, assuming even a modicum of common sense, we would not go to war and risk what we have that satisfies our needs in order to pursue miscellaneous wants. Governments, not being able to define their true needs, let alone distinguish them from their wants, will not only go to war, but also not see the risk that they are taking with their very substance and that of their people. By the way, if you repeat your new phone number a little more slowly, you may get a call in or two. Okay, the phone number is 646 652-4620. Thank you for the hint. I didn't think I was saying it that fast, but I'm glad you mentioned that to me. I guess I am. I love hearing your passion, but following the phone number at your pace is a real challenge. Be well. Thank you so much, and thank you for the hint. Okay, here's the last one. This is from my Confederate friend in Tennessee. He says, I guess it's Rambo. I have been listening to your broadcast for the last 6 months, and I need to thank you for being one of my favorite internet radio shows. Well, thank you very much. This is really a feat considering there are so many others seem to have many people working to produce them, and yours is a one-man show. That is true. I think that your personality makes yours excel, since the others have many emotional outbursts, and you always seem to be amicable and reasonable. Well, I thank you. I will try to give you some mental material to help. When I speak to my kin of the right, they usually make the mistake of forgetting that all government is force. It is a violence and the threat of violence. As Washington said, government is not reason, it is not eloquent, it is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. I show them that every law is backed with a uniform gunman. Then I ask them if God would approve using violence against someone who has hurt no one. If they begrudgingly concede the point, I then ask them if violence can be used against someone because he is doing something to himself they do not like. Issues of slavery and the subjective nature of value are then discussed. This usually works with the right. When speaking to the people of the left, I usually have to teach them about scarcity. They simply forget that the universe is indifferent to our needs and we need human labor to survive. If they have a right to goods such as healthcare, food, or shelter, then those that make such things are their slaves. They cannot withhold their labor and must accept whatever they are given for it. Once scarcity is explained, we can proceed to Bassett's broken window fallacy to show them opportunity, cost, and that economics is a great weapon to use against the Republicans. If I'm lucky, I can get to show them that the Republicans and mercantilists and the socialism and that socialism suffers from the problem of economic calculation. Capitalism is simply the freedom between two extreme and tyrannical schools of thought. I hope that these strategies can be fruitful for you as they have been for me. I apologize for not writing sooner. I hope this is helpful. And he has said, feel the kind words. I really appreciate that. And a T-shirt's in the mail for you. I would like to do is we are out of time. But we have less than 1 minute to go. So we're going to kill this broadcast. I have one more email, and I will read that next week. Next week is Christmas Eve, and I will be on the air on Christmas Eve. That will be Thursday morning, okay? And I guess I'll be speaking to you then. In the interim, please send me your email to comments@libertytalkradio.com. comments@libertytalkradio.com. Thank you. And here's our parting shot. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Rand Shaker's Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated. Your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. Government is like training wheels. They control the ride and your every move. Ron Paul has a sign that says, don't steal. The government hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.